Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Hello, it's Peter. How are you? I hope you're well. I hope you're having a great day. I'm wearing my shorts. I've just had an ice cream cone. Depending on the day you're listening to this, you might find that little bit of information a little bit odd. But then, as I was reminded today, when I was out picking plants, I tend to wear my shorts a lot. I'm not on my own in that department, though. My new good friend, the only man I've ever built a garden alongside who's never spoke to me on Valentine's Day, the Ed Burnham, as you may refer to him in some parts of the bigger island. He also wears shorts. There's a lady crossing the road. I just stopped her. Now I'm talking into my phone, and there's a police car driving past. It appears I've been inspired by the Sex Pistols sailing down the Thames, singing God Save the Queen with Richard Branson. Where was it going with all this information? So about three, two. Pick a prime number between 1 and 10, and I'll refer this one to Tim Howell. But I did a series of episodes from West Cork Garden Trail. And funny thing is, West Cork Garden Trail is... come on, Mrs. Go ahead. I'm being polite to you. She waved. That's okay. She waved. Did I get the emergency indicator flash? Where was it going? No, I'm unsure. The people are crazy drivers. Sure, I said, I'll come down. I'll go visit you. I'll delay my holidays. I saw the entire of all of the gardens, and there are some absolute gems in there. I mean, from Bantry House, Brigitte Shelswell White, Bamboo Park in Glengariff, Mary and David Tanner and their wonderful garden. The list is endless, and they're all a series of gardens that charge €3 or €4, or some of them are free or €5 in. But they're wonderful, and West Cork is wonderful. It is, in my opinion, the most magical place that has ever existed in Ireland. Which part, you say, Peter? Which part? Please tell us. Well, the whole lot of it. It's not a part of my horticultural technical term here, but that's not a bullshit. And if you are going, go to Scally's Super Value in Clonakilty. They have the best custard donut I have ever tasted in my lifetime. And you know I have a soft spot for cake and Guinness. And then I stayed on for another 3 days. So 7 days in total. And then that year, I then went back down the last weekend of October camping. And I brought two of my mates who'd been listening to the podcast, Anthony and Darren, to see a couple of the gardens from West Cork Garden Trail. And then we went out for a couple of pints with the people who owned them that night. One of the ones I missed out on was this little gem. It's a wee little place called Glebe Gardens. The story may have changed, and maybe I need to update it. But that's what the Sideshow has been all about. It's why Anne-Marie Powell gets to be interviewed twice. It's why Andrew Wilson has been on 3 times. And if you are down in West Cork, or you're from Supervalue, or you're working Supervalue, in fact, if you work in Scally's Supervalue, please send on the custard donuts. Thank you. It'll be appreciated.
Introduce yourself.
Jean Perry from Glebe Gardens in Baltimore.
Jean, what is Glebe Gardens for those who have never been here before?
Glebe Gardens is a 6-acre site that's basically north facing, and it's a working garden, a working vegetable garden and a herb garden, flower garden, wild meadow, and an amphitheatre. It's just hopefully a bit for everybody.
your garden, and I've been to a fair amount of them that I've been involved with West Cork Garden Trail, but yours is extremely different, but for all of the very beautiful reasons. Is that a fair way to appraise that?
I guess so. I mean, we try to keep it as wild as possible within a formal structure, I suppose. The vegetable garden is a potager garden where we have a no-dig system. We're organic. We surround the garden with herbs and flowers and fruit bushes in order to make a micro-environment that's easier to grow with when you don't use chemicals. But yeah, I hope it's relaxing. I hope it's interesting.
Yeah.
I to be honest, it's very hard for gardeners to go and visit other gardens, so it's hard for me to compare, you know.
Well, you're talking to a guy who I guess, and I know I can hear you at home, who noticed that show grew plants under my bed when I was 5 years of age, and I did nothing but and studied horticulture, and I build gardens for a living, and I'm now in my spare time visiting gardens, and I'll be camping in Cork and visiting probably more gardens, and yes, there is that. But yours, when I look at how the vegetable garden is done, you don't just grow it for the sake of growing things, you use that as well, because your garden has a, do I call it a restaurant?
Yeah, so we have a daytime cafe and a restaurant at night. Yeah, so we do grow as much produce as we can. We try to major on things that we can't buy easily. So we are self-sufficient in all salads, in things like beans, courgettes. We try very much to grow things that aren't easy to buy organic, and that that you would really notice the freshness of, you know. I mean, there's no point in us trying to grow main crop potatoes, because so many other people grow really good main crop potatoes. So we concentrate on earlies and a salad variety that, you know, we use sometimes. And then we, other than that, we will buy the potatoes from the farmer's market, you know, that sort of thing.
You've also gone a stage further, and this is something we chatted about, but the edible flower beds that are working and are on the way, but they're in progress, but they're there. And I was kind of, yeah, that just intrigued me, because you haven't just done, this isn't, as by the way, for those who've never been here, and I'll try and get a photograph of this, so at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow or sideshow.com, and just put in Glebe, Glebe Gardens, and Sideshow, and it'll come up for you, and I'll try and get some video stuff on that. You haven't just got like one or two window boxes. This is an entire area.
Yeah. Well, that is the plan. You know, it's a work in progress, but next year we hope that the whole, the two flower borders, which I think are 60 foot long by about 12 foot wide either side, they will be full of flowers that have some kind of edible feature, whether it's things like sea kale, which in the spring is like a mass of white flowers, but you can use, you know, you can force it and you can, you know, eat the leaves. Carnations, pinks, daylilies. You make daylilies are really delicious. I don't know if anyone, have you tried a daylily? Yeah. Do you not like them? They're really crunchy.
Well, don't get me wrong. We had this conversation earlier on, and I was kind of saying about the pips from the Hawthorns, and they taste like wallpaper paste, but inverted commas, they're listed as edible. And then there's also a bit where if you've eaten a gooseberry or you've eaten rhubarb, it takes about bite three or four before you kind of turn around and go, that's actually grand, I can eat that now.
Well, a lot of them are what you do with them, aren't they? You know, I mean, that's the thing. We had a guest chef here 2 years ago from London, and he was from a Michelin star restaurant in London, and he was doing he was feeding 40 people on two nights, seven courses, and nearly everything came out of the garden. Not totally, but nearly everything. And the first course was I mean, it sounds horrible, but it was absolutely delicious. And it was a raw egg yolk covered with a half a glass full of petals. We had to pick enough petals for 40 people two nights. And we had them all lined up in tumblers, and it was half a tumbler full of petals per serving. So each egg had, it was topped with breadcrumbs that were fried in garlic and all sorts of things. And then he just tipped the petals on top of it, and then he spritzed them with a dressing. And it was absolutely delicious. And they were a mixture of things like calendula, dahlias, cornflowers, pinks, you know, anything that we, in fact, we nearly stripped the garden to do enough petals for 40 people two nights running. But it was stunning. It was really stunning.
Let's give people then the bit that you haven't said, which is the award that the Irish Times newspaper gave you. What's that? Okay.
Well, last year, the cafe won the best cafe in Ireland 2015. Irish Times, sorry, the Irish Times Best Cafe in Ireland 2015.
Now, that's the first thing that maybe you listen weren't aware of if you've never been to this part of West Cork. Let's go to the second bit then, because you said amphitheatre. And you call it Ampi? I call it Amphi.
Yeah, I don't know what is the correct, but either way, we know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So again, for those who aren't aware, I'll try and get a photograph or two of this. But when you walk in, you cross a bridge and you go across, and there's water either side. I'm setting the scene, and the banks are raised up either side. And you'll explain that little bit of how that happened in a minute. And then you walk down to the right, and you've got like sweeping grass, and it's like a Timotei advert. And when you walk around, it lopes down a bit to the left, but it backtracks on itself, and you've got this almost 360 slaty stone looking wall, and it's got tiers of grass that you would be inclined to naturally plonk your backside on and sit, which is fine. And if you know the War Memorials in Island Bridge, take that, but then take a section out of it, like a bite out of it, like you would out of a donut, and fade it out into grass and do the rest of the tiers of grass. Does that kind of make sense to you? Yeah. But you had some musicians play here that I would be big fans of.
Yeah, well, most years we have the Hothouse Flowers play in August at some stage. And they're really very popular and great fun. And we would probably have 250 people maybe, or 300, sat around the amphitheatre. And they play out in the meadow until it gets dark, and it is magical.
Most gardens, and here's the thing that's caught my eye. Number one, it's still, and I say this over and over again, it's that analogy of seeing the beautiful woman on the far side of the bar, and you're wooed, you're warmed, and you don't know why. You want to go up and not even ask her to dance, but ask her, can you write her poetry, paint her, can you spend the rest of your life with her? And you've only just met her, but yet you're head over heels and you're besotted. And grown men may not admit to it, having had that feeling, or may never had that before, but that's the way I see it with gardens. And I feel extremely at home, as I've said before, or that I would stay longer than I should here. And that's something that is either inherent and comes from the top, or is works its way from your heart, your head, into your grounds, your gardens that you have, which are stunningly beautiful, but yet, as you would call it, I won't say slightly disorganized, but a little bit wilder. Okay.
On the wild side.
But when I take all that and wrap it together and push that to one side, the people still have to come. But you do the garden thing, but you also do the business side of it, slightly different to almost all of them that I've met so far, but yet it all works. It's got a certain magic about it.
Well, I don't know how that happens. That's just the way when we first came here, we had been market gardeners for several years in the UK, and we were exhausted and we were never going to garden again, you know. And when we saw this house, we had decided on a certain amount of money that we were going to spend on a house, because we had four children and we had no means of income. We just, this whim to come and live here. And this house, unfortunately, was half as much again as we decided that we were going to spend. So we ended up with very little money. And one thing that happens when you need to earn money is you tend to go back to what you can do. And the thing that we had done before was what we knew how to do. So we decided to start gardening again, but in a very different way. Instead of having a field full of rows and rows of vegetables, we would grow a vegetable garden in a very artistic way. I mean, you've seen my husband is a painter, so he has a very artistic way of looking at things, and he also has a great eye for form and structure. So he would decide, mostly decides on where paths and things go, and I tend to fill in the gaps, you know. So it works very much as a team. We work as a team. And I've always wanted it to be a peaceful place, a romantic place, you know, somewhere where people can feel comfortable and, that it's worth coming to, but it's not so formal that you're afraid to touch anything or, you know. I really want people, when they share the garden with us, to enjoy it for its peace as much as anything.
Let's sidetrack then and let's go back. You mentioned about the market garden side of it. What age did you start doing that market garden thing? How did yourself and Peter meet?
Well, we met at agricultural college a long time ago. And we didn't really do any horticulture. Well, we did a bit, but there was not much horticulture there. But when we were expecting our first child, I got very interested in growing vegetables because obviously I wanted her to eat, you know, pure, wonderful, clean things as one does with your first child, you know. And we happened to live on a site where there was room for polytunnels and, you know, there was a field. And we also lived across the road from a man called Bob Sherman, who ended up as the head gardener at the Organic Centre in the UK. He happened to be working on the garden of a very wealthy man across the road from us. And he gave me a few books on organic growing. And we'd been to agricultural college when there was no word organic. I mean, you know, this was 1969-70. So, you know, organic was just it was a very early thing, really. I mean, everybody did it organically, but then it became a kind of a more of a niche thing. So we started growing lots of vegetables. My husband was manager of a timber mill at the time. And when, you know, we decided that that had to change because he never saw the children and, you know, it was just too. So we decided to use the land that we had. And we tell this story and it's true in a way. Our kids started selling eggs and vegetables at the end of the drive on a Sunday because they were little girls who wanted to play shops. And they sold so many that we thought, maybe this is a good idea, you know. And so he decided to give up the timber mill and we were, you know, we had our first organic symbol in 1981.
Right.
So we stuck it out till 1989. And by then I was absolutely exhausted from the constant, it's unremitting market gardening. It's really hard work. And all our friends with market gardens, they all use their family for labor. I mean, it just doesn't pay. Economically, it's a labor of love, and I was done with it. And we had a boy called Richard working for us who happened to be Irish. He knocked on our door one day and said, would we give him a job? And he had this kind of parrot, I think it's called a parrot head Mohican, you know. And I looked at him, I thought, he can either be brilliant or he won't be. And I said, can you drive a tractor? And he said, no, but if you give me the afternoon, I'll learn. And he did. And he stayed with us for 4 years. On and off. He came and went sometimes because he had a sort of love hate, you know, had to come back sometimes and then he came back again. And when we were thinking of moving, he said, why don't you go and live in Ireland? You know, because we looked in Cornwall and north of England and we just hadn't found the right place. And we thought, you know, in the 1980s, Ireland, you know, from a UK point of view, was a really scary, you know, scenario, because it was all, you know, there was a lot of the bombing going on at the time and all that. And Richard said, don't be ridiculous, you know, go and see. And so we booked the first 2 weeks holiday we'd ever taken our children on. Being market gardeners, you don't get 2 weeks away. And we ended up in Kerry in June of 1989, and it was the most wonderful 2 weeks. It was like being in Italy. The sun shone every day, and every time we went into Kenmare, they said, "It's not always like this. Don't think it's like this all the time." But we were sold, you know. And as it happens, Richard came from Cape Clear, which is just over the water there. And so we went home and we put our house on the market, sold it in August, came back in September to try and find somewhere to live. And that was the beginning of our life here, really. It was the most exciting thing we've ever done. And I can't say I've had one day of regret. It's been wonderful, a wonderful place for the children to grow up. They had great education, they had freedom. You know, it's totally different to what they would have experienced where they were in England, you know.
That I'm just blown away. Well, because you hear the people and you see them on the TV programs and they say, you know, let's move to Australia and we'll be able to live by the beach. And I'm going, no, you're going to end up as a taxi driver. You'll end up working in a chip shop. It's not going to work. No. It's not the way it works. You relocate, but you still have to earn an income. But you got to do it with, I guess, the family around and maybe not so much labour intensive, to be quite fair.
Yeah, we did. And we did lots of other things. I mean, I was a waitress down the village and, you know, we did a lot. Peter worked in other people's gardens, built other people's sheds and things like this. We did lots of things because, you know, in fairness, it's a hard place to make a living is West Cork, you know, and it wasn't until they were really fairly grown up. I mean, they're now between 30 and 39. So, you know, they have grown up here. And they, apart from my second daughter who lives in Glasgow, which is near enough home now because she lived 12 years in Canada. So we're, Glasgow's close, that's fine. Okay. That's okay, But they've all lived, you know, in America, Barcelona, and they've all come back. And this is their home and they love it.
But there is something also about West Cork. And I was here camping last year and I'm back again. And when West Cork Garden Trail said, would you come down for 3 days and do the sideshow thing with all of these wonderful people who have beautiful gardens? I said, well, like, it's not just going to West Cork. It's going to West Cork, look at beautiful gardens. It's to meet wonderful. There's something magic which draws you back.
Definitely there is. It is an amazing place and it's very cosmopolitan. It's very, because we make our living from tourists, so, you know, we get to meet some amazing people. And the village itself is a very friendly place. It's got an amazing history. It's just a lovely place to live, really. I mean, there isn't a day that we don't think we're so lucky. And when you listen to what's going on in the world around us now, where else would you be, honestly?
Hey, West Cork, when the sun is shining, is like, is it that?
That's when it isn't.
well, the fact that you got sunshine in Kenmare makes me think that you're quite lucky and I should probably hide you underneath the rainbow. I have yet to figure that one out. The half of the country is listening to this podcast going, what type of sunglasses is that woman wearing?
No, seriously, Kenmare was sunny for 2 weeks. It really was. And it was so beautiful.
Yeah, Kenmare can't be sunny for 2 weeks. That's just the way it is. It's just, it's an impossibility.
Well,
it's
obviously it was meant to be because we were meant to be here, you know. And since we came here, my mum and dad moved over and my mum still lives here and Peter's brother and his family. You know, I mean, we really are surrounded by our family now. Even my younger sister's moved over this year. So, you know, so everyone loves West Cork. Yeah.
Let's sidetrack. Gleeb Gardens, I come in the front gate, the coffee shop, cafe, restaurant is to my left. There's a wee little bar to the side of that. There's a step down into the gardens. I walk through what I would now call an edible, almost entirely garden. There's a bridge. The story of the bridge is the one that caught my attention when we were walking it.
Well, in 2004, we were approached by one of the trustees of the Gwendolyn Harold Barry Trust, who used to be connected to Cree Gardens, which had been sold into private hands and so was no longer open to the public. Would we do something in memory of Mr. and Mrs. Harold Barry? And I actually have to say I was privileged to meet Mr. Harold Barry. I didn't ever meet Mrs. Harold Barry, but I met Peter and he was a wonderful, wonderful man in the garden. Cree Gardens was, and probably still is, an amazing garden. So I thought it was just such a wonderful thing to be asked to do something in memory of them. So we, at the time, decided that we would put a bridge over what was a railway cutting. The railway had run from Baltimore to Skibbereen, taking the fish from Baltimore to Skibbereen and onwards to Billingsgate Market in London, at least four times a day. It must have been an amazing sight, you know, running through the land, just and leaving us a strip of a meadow below it. So we decided to put a bridge over the railway cutting. And then we had also said that we would put up some kind of structure in the meadow in memory of Mr. and Mrs. Harold Barry. And we had said that we maybe do some kind of gazebo looking out of the water, but it seemed too suburban at the time. And I buy obviously loads of glossy garden magazines, and I saw this amphitheatre in much bigger. It was in Dartington, I think, in the UK. So I said to Peter, maybe we should do something like that, you know, just cut out a shape and tear it, because there was a natural slope to the land. And just after Christmas in 2004, he got a friend with a mini digger, and they worked away for about 4 days, and they made an amphitheatre, and they used all the spoil. And they put it at the other end of the railway cutting, which then stopped the water running away. So all the water that runs off our land now ends up in the railway cutting, which is like a canal now.
Yeah,
yeah, it is. And it, in the winter, it can be at least 4 foot deep, which we know because Peter's fallen in it. And it came up to his chest, so we know it gets very deep. But it varies according, because it's not, there's nothing flowing into it, you know, there's no river flowing into it. It's purely water coming off the land. So, you know, but anyway, that has worked really well. It's a lovely piece of landscaping, really, the amphitheatre. And then as soon as we'd done it, everyone said, oh, you know, you should do music or theatre. So now we do. We do that every year, sometimes more than others, but it's very weather dependent. You know,
you're involved in West Cork Garden Trail.
Yeah,
I gather you have your own website and contact details.
We do, glebegardens.com, and the email is glebegardens@gmail.com.
All right, if you're stuck for any of that, I know most of you listen to this. You got the headphones in and you're jogging the back roads at this stage of the game. Or you're on the bike into the city centre. Or like my good friend Mick, you're on the train, and it's probably Tuesday by the time you hear this, somewhere in October or December or February, Mick, depending on where you are. I'll search you on Twitter and we'll put you directly in touch with Glebe Gardens. They are part of the West Cork Garden Trail. And if I'm honest with you, you're probably going to want to take my advice on this one. Get here, come in, have a bite to eat first, and then go for the wander. You'll probably want to spend about 3 hours in total, including your bite to eat, maybe a little bit longer, depending on the day that's in it. And by the way, when it's raining here, which is a rarity considering who's sitting in front of me, it never rains. But when you come here, even when it's raining, it looks majestic. Come here to see the goats and just sit back and enjoy. It is stunning. You won't regret it. Thank you so much for your time. That was being a real treasure. And thank you for the tea.
It's okay. It was the best I could do. The coffee machine is beyond me.
The coffee machine will be working on the day that you get here, however. All right, folks, that's it. At Sideshow on Twitter, sideshow.com, and facebook.com/thatsideshow. We'll put you directly in touch. Cheers. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Well, there you have it. Anything you need at Sideshow on Twitter, sideshow.com, facebook.com/thesideshow. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was worthwhile. Do yourself a favour. Go back, find the entire back catalogue of the West Cork Garden Trail episodes. Listen to them. As soon as you do that, I'll find the next equivalent of the West Cork Garden Trail. It might be on the Big Island. It might be Secret Gardens of East Anglia by my good friend Barbara Segalen, former guest of the show. Let's see if we can try another one for 2019. I'd look forward to it. Chat soon. Have a great weekend. Don't forget to hug your mother. Bye.